Countrywide on ABC Radio.
I'm absolutely calling on the Deputy Prime Minister to pay attention to his own report.
Growers work from sun up to sundown, so...
Countrywide.
We need to speak to these growers 1 o'clock in the morning.
And to actually act on behalf of the farmers.
They're going to get it from the Yanks or the French or whoever. So let's get our foot in the door and let's be the first.
Countrywide. The politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.
G'day, I'm Clint Jasper. We know lots about the drought hitting the east coast of Australia right now, but did you know about the one off the coast?
We can see it on land, and it's not a pretty picture, and we really do feel for our farming cousins, but people don't see the impact of climate variation, and they don't see drought at sea.
More about the drought in our oceans coming up in the next half hour. But we're diving into some agri-politics first. This week, Scott Morrison announced some immediate and major changes for farmers in the grip of a farm labour crisis. For years now, farmers have been pressuring the government to reform the range of options they have for hiring short-term seasonal labour. More often than not, they've been let down. The backpacker tax saga dried up the supply of working holiday makers, and calls for local unemployed people to pick fruit and vegetable crops have been labelled as uninformed. But this announcement wasn't.
What mattered most was right now, and getting access to the labour that they needed right now. And that's what I said. I said we would work on these answers first.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced that with immediate effect, under the relaxed rules, Pacific Islanders taking up seasonal work will be able to stay 3 months longer, and the age limit for working holiday visas for some countries will be lifted to 35. Backpackers will no longer need to leave jobs every 6 months and will be able to triple the length of their stay if they do extra agricultural work. Warwick Long spoke with the National Farmers Federation's president, Fiona Simpson, about how close the government got to delivering everything they've been asking for.
No, is it ever in everything that we ask for? We've always got more we talk to government about. But look, it is a huge step forward. At our Congress a couple of weeks ago, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that he had a plan for helping us and was very willing to keep talking to agriculture about our crisis and finding ways to move forward. So I think, you know, after the filling our jobs with Australians, which is always something we want to do, this is the next step, working with what we've already got on the table to make a difference in this year's harvest. And I think with these measures announced today, effective immediately, they'll be a huge relief for farmers out there who have now some other options available to them.
What are the changes that you think will mean the most to the farm sector?
Well, there's a couple. So obviously the changes have been announced. The main changes are around two visas, which is the working holiday maker visa, commonly known as the backpacker visa, and the seasonal worker program. And both of these visas are used extensively by farmers in different areas of Australia with different sorts of labour needs, but are finding some of their drawbacks. And some of the changes announced will go actually to addressing some of those drawbacks. So one of them is for backpackers, for example, they'll actually be able to access a third year of a visa if they actually do 6 months of work in regional Australia. So I think that is incredibly useful. Also, increasing the age limit from 30 to 35 years for several countries, that's the feedback that we've had too, is that people are still backpacking now in their mid-30s and are quite happy to go out on farm, experience regional Australia, work hard for a couple of months, earn a bit more money, and keep travelling. So those sorts of things will be good. Reducing some of the upfront costs for and out-of-pocket costs for employers in the seasonal worker program, extending the time frame for labour market testing validity, extending the period of work for the seasonal worker program from 6 to 9 months. All of those things will be a huge step forward for farmers who are currently wondering just where they're going to get their workers this season.
Yeah, there's some of the changes which I'd imagine you could almost define as common sense, allowing somebody to work at the same agricultural operation for more than 6 months and extending that seasonal work period that you just outlined from 6 to 9 months because some crops are harvested over a long time of that year. But there are others that I'd imagine you will be questioned on today, and one is reducing that out-of-pocket expense for employers on the seasonal workers program. These are people usually coming from poorer countries that don't have much money in the first place. Are you putting more of the burden on those people coming to Australia to work? And do you worry that that will turn some people away?
No. I think it's more about the recoverable costs that employers pay for the seasonal worker program. So this is not about trying to take money out of the pockets of seasonal workers. This is actually about recovering some of those costs, from the upfront costs that farmers have to pay. And it is about, that they're still paid according to awards. Their conditions must still be, the best conditions that we have. And this is about matching up farmers with employers in a way that is reducing some of the costs for employers while giving seasonal workers still a lot of options to come on farms.
What's missing here? What else would you like to see from the government?
Well, we still are talking to government about an ag visa generally, which would enable people who aren't part of the seasonal worker program to come in under a visa specifically designed for agriculture, with some of the things that we don't see in these current changes. One of them is about portability, for example. The seasonal worker program is still attached to a single employer. So an employer signs up for an employee or a number of employees to come for a period of time for a number of hours. But look, we're willing to absolutely give this a go. Those sorts of changes, new visas take a long time to establish, and certainly the changes that we've seen announced today will make a difference for this current harvest, and that will be an enormous relief for an industry, Warwick, that is growing exponentially.
President of the National Farmers Federation, Fiona Simpson. And as Fiona mentioned in that interview, the conditions those workers are employed under is a huge issue here. Protecting those workers from exploitation is a key concern for the industry. That's why a certification and training program that helps farmers demonstrate fair employment practices is set to be expanded across the country. The federal government's committed $1.5 million to fund the Fair Farms Initiative, which was developed by horticulture lobby group GrowCom. Jody Gunders spoke with Chief Advocate Rachel McKenzie, who says the program gives growers the tools to differentiate themselves in the marketplace.
The problem is that at the moment, whether the grower pays the worker correctly or not, that product still ends up on the shelves at the retailer level, and consumers have no way of knowing whether the product is ethically harvested. And unfortunately, that just pushes prices down to an unsustainable level, because if you're not actually paying your workers properly, you're not paying the true cost of doing business.
So this initiative has a solution to that. Have you needed, you've had the pilot program to begin with, the certification scheme, but does this money help that continue? Does it help it become broader?
Well, that's a great question. One of the issues we've had is that this has grown like Topsy, for want of a better descriptor. So obviously we're a Queensland-based horticulture membership organisation, and we've been battling valiantly to get this thing up and running. But we really need this extra funding to enable it to reach its potential. So the need is there, the desire is there, the ingredients are there. We just need this funding to get it all put together and make sure that it's an Australia-wide solution for all of horticulture and potentially even other parts of agriculture into the future.
Let's talk about the timing. A wage theft report was released just recently saying that migrant workers in agriculture are among the worst paid in the country. Many, it says, are suffering in silence. How does this go towards addressing that problem?
Well, I guess it was ongoing reports like this that made us, as an industry organisation, feel that we needed to show some leadership, that we couldn't just keep saying, oh, it's just a few bad apples, or it's not indicative of the growers as a whole. We had to actually acknowledge that this was an industry problem and we needed to come up with an industry solution. And that's what Fair Farms is all about. It's actually about rewarding those who do the right thing and giving customers, retailers, etc., a mechanism to shut the people who consistently and intentionally do the wrong thing out of.
Are you seeing a shift in the way people feel about this, in the way growers are responding and being able to, have the tools to do the right thing?
Absolutely. When we first floated this idea, we actually had quite a lot of resistance from our growers, and I can understand why, because if you are doing the right thing and you comply with the law, you feel like, well, why do I have to prove that? However, I think that more and more they realise that there is an element who isn't doing that, that those people are undercutting them and they're gaining access to the supply chain at a lower price. And so initially there was some resistance, and I think there still will be resistance. No one likes another hoop to jump through, but I think there is recognition from the good growers that it's a necessary thing to do, and hopefully in a few years' time, as a sector, we'll be able to hold our heads up high and say we really acted to get rid of this problem ourselves.
GrowCom Chief Advocate Rachel McKenzie speaking to Jody Gunders on Countrywide with me, Clint Jasper. One Southern Queensland vegetable grower says the visa changes, while a positive step, don't address the more critical labour issues his business faces. Anthony Starts from Koala Farms in the Lockyer Valley says an agricultural visa is still needed to fill the shortage of experienced overseas workers.
The trouble that we're having is that if we've got all backpackers in those teams, that some of them might show potential leadership and potential ability to be able to make those decisions, but we can't hang on to them for long enough to start to invest into those guys.
And so a few extra months wouldn't make the difference that you need?
Look, it'll help because there is a bit of a shortage of backpackers, and every time we get a new backpacker into our business, there's a cost involved with training and getting them up to speed. So the longer that they're able to stay, the better it is for our business. But we also have a yearning need for that next level up, you know, that more skilled person, the person that will take responsibility and ownership of some areas of the business.
Growers have long called for a dedicated ag visa. If you had such a thing in place, do you think that could potentially be made to make it easier so that if you can identify someone who has capacity to work in a leadership position, you'd be able to keep them on for longer, for several years even?
That's it. Those skills don't just fall out of trees. We go through hundreds of people to find, you know, one or two that have got the potential to be able to see value in that type of leadership role and that also have the capability to do it. If we were able to select those people for more permanent positions, you know, that would be a big help for us.
The question that often comes up here is, well, could you give those leadership positions to Australian workers? Do they want those jobs? How much luck have you had trying to get Australians to fill those positions?
We are constantly recruiting for those lower level leadership positions, whether they be people running planting teams or running a crew of 10 people cutting lettuce, and people just aren't wanting that type of role. We can't find Aussies that want to do it. So we end up in a transitional period with short-term backpackers doing those jobs, and it's pretty challenging. We only just get them skilled up enough to be able to do it, and then they're moving on. Look, it is a good beginning. It's a positive step, but I think the shortcomings in our labour market are a lot deeper than just people to pick fruit and to do the menial jobs. It runs a fair bit deeper in ag than that.
Anthony Starts from Koala Farms speaking to Jody Gunders. Industry group Seafood Industry Australia says that the government needs to be aware of how the drought is also hitting our oceans and rivers. Diminished rainfall and higher than average water temperatures are having a huge impact on fisheries around the country, with rising shellfish mortality rates and fish migration. Reporter Ruby Mitchell spoke to Seafood Industry Australia CEO Jane Lovell, who says drought funding and family support should be extended to water-based farmers.
There's lots of ways that our industry can be impacted. If you think about lack of water flow through rivers, that can impact recruitment. Things like prawn catches can be down as a consequence because they need that water flushing through. We've also got the changing in the temperature of our oceans, which means that seafood can be pushing south following temperatures. So all of these things, you know, impact the ability of our fishers to be able to continue to provide that great Australian seafood for the Australian consumer.
Do you think that idea of the drought being in the ocean as well has kind of been missing from the overall narrative?
There are so many ways that the seafood industry in Australia is missing from the narrative. So if you think about drought at sea and the assistance that's offered to our farmers, and again, we absolutely don't begrudge that. We're not whinging about, you know, about that. We're just saying, please, you know, think about how this impacts us as well. So we suffer mental health issues, and drought would be affecting our fishers just like it affects farmers. But we don't get support. We don't get access to the farm household allowance, for instance. So, you know, our wild catch fishers are left with the same problems, but not the same support, and we think that needs to change.
Yeah, so do you think the proposed funding to support drought-affected farmers should be extended to sea-based farmers?
Absolutely. We think we should be allowed to apply, just like land-based farmers are allowed, encouraged to apply. And if our case is valid and the businesses are eligible, then they should also get assistance. We don't see that there's a big difference. So, you know, farmhouse allowance is one clear example of that. And we're lobbying for that right now.
I suppose we're talking a lot about the support we can give farmers and families. How about drought-proofing and kind of adapting to changing conditions?
I don't know about drought-proofing, but I think adaptation is obviously something that all primary producers need to be thinking about. And some of the things that we probably need some help in the regulatory space around is that whole issue about species, you know, moving south. So fish that used to be off the coast of New South Wales may now be finding their way down to Tassie. So, you know, we need the regulations to change to allow for those species to be caught in other areas. And so it would flow on. So, that, you know, that's a bigger issue because we basically rent the ocean. We get permission to fish. So when the fish that we try and catch aren't where they used to be, we need the rules to change to help us follow them.
Yeah, it's tricky. You can't exactly pen them in like sheep or cattle, can you?
No, we can't. And we can't buy food to feed them or encourage them to stay where they don't want to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think all those things need to be on the table as well if we're really having the big drought conversation. And ultimately, this is a huge conversation because behind it all is this issue of food security, and that's a national and international problem. So we have a responsibility to make sure that we go out and continue to provide, you know, the 1 billion meals a year that the Australian seafood industry provides. We've got a responsibility to keep doing that. Otherwise, we're putting a drain on other parts of the world where they can't afford to keep sending us their food.
Do you think this extends to a bigger issue of increasingly severe climate conditions and rising ocean temperatures as well?
Look, I think all those things are absolutely in the mix, Ruby, but, you know, we don't want to overwhelm people by this. Or if we bring it back to the practical things that can be done, we would like the government to allow wild catch fishers access to the same supports, mental health, farm household allowance that our land-based cousins have, and we would really call on the community to think about the impact on our industry, which you can't see, and to go out and choose Aussie seafood.
Ruby Mitchell with that report. My name's Clint Jasper and you're listening to Countrywide. Pastured egg producers are riding a boom created by a backlash against new free-range stocking density rates in Australia. As Jennifer Nichols discovered, they're generally small-scale operations that don't sell through supermarkets, and keeping up with demand is proving a challenge.
On the outskirts of the Sunshine Coast trendy, friendly Perugian beach village, former film industry assistant Alexi Cox didn't set out to become a full-time pastured egg producer. But when she and her husband Mark Dragon opened Dragon Farms 2 years ago, their customers made that decision for her.
We started with 20 chickens and we kept selling out, and then we got another 30, and then we went for 300, now we've got 1,200. So it really is just driven by sales, really, rather than an interest to be a chicken farmer.
Their chickens chase insects and scratch around in open paddocks, laying and sleeping in a series of mobile sheds that need to be moved every 2 days.
It's pasture raised, so you rotate with the cattle and they fertilise, they clean up any sort of ticks or any bugs, and then you spell that for a while, for 2 weeks after rain, then the cattle come on.
Customers come to them. 90% of Alexi Cox pastured eggs, chemical-free fruits, vegetables and honey are sold farm direct, with eggs priced between $6 to $8 a carton.
We find that when people are coming to the farm gate, they want the best for their families and they're happy to pay for the quality.
In the last decade, Australia's appetite for eggs increased by 54%, setting a new production record of close to 6.2 billion eggs last financial year.
Which is, you know, really quite a remarkable growth story.
Scrambled, poached, fried and baked, Australian Eggs Managing Director Rowan McMonies says 16.9 million eggs are eaten every day, an equivalent of 245 eggs per person per year. For the first time, he says demand for free-range eggs just pipped caged eggs in the supermarkets. Last financial year, free-range accounted for 45% of sales compared to 44% for caged eggs.
really is a continuation of a long-term trend that we've seen really over 10 or 15 years.
Do you think caged eggs will always play a role?
I expect that they will, because while there is this trend that I've flagged, and it's a very real and continuing trend, there is also a segment of the market that hasn't moved at all. There's consumers out there that only ever buy caged eggs. And as you'd be well aware, there's a price point difference between cage and barn and free range and specially sort of organic eggs. And there's some people for which affordability is a really key driver, and they're large in number. So I don't know if there will be a time when they'll disappear from a demand perspective, but I can't see it at this stage.
Like dollar a litre milk, some eggs are heavily discounted by supermarkets. And due to drought, prices are under pressure from increased grain prices. Mr McMonnies says caged eggs generally sell for around $3 a dozen, barn-laid $4 to $4.50, and free-range around $6 to $7. Then there's pastured eggs.
Seems the sky's the limit. If you've got a local story and, you know, a farm that people can go to and believe in and be part of that narrative, there are significant premiums to be obtained.
So what are pastured eggs?
We focus on the actual way that the eggs are produced, and that they have to be outside, that they have to be farmed in a system where there's paddock rotations, and that the soils and the pasture are also managed, and that they're in a mobile system.
Lee McCosker runs a licensing and accreditation company called Proof, pasture raised on open fields. It's an independent certification program for pork, chicken, beef, lamb and eggs, which can retail for up to $11 a dozen.
It has been shown that this is what the consumer actually wants. They don't like the idea of their birds being kept in cages or not being able to access sunshine or pick at a worm or have a dust bath outside.
Free-range egg cartons are required to display the stocking rate, which in the case of Sunny Queen eggs is a maximum of 1,500 birds per hectare. But according to Lee McCosker, Australia's new national definition of free-range, introduced in April this year, is a backward step.
Stocking densities can be 10,000 birds per hectare. Now that's a massive change from the code of practice, which initially said 1,500 birds per hectare for free range. Under the new free range standard, birds don't have to be outside all the time. They just have to have access to the outdoors. There's actually no requirement to force the birds to go outside. So when you're looking at a massive shed that might have 20, 25,000 birds in it, there might only be a couple of hundred of them that actually venture outdoors.
Lee McCosker says pastured eggs offer an ethical alternative to intensive production with a focus on animal welfare. Dean Main from Piggy in the Middle at Kilkeven near Gympie in Queensland can't keep up with demand.
Oh, Jen, they're very popular. We probably can't produce enough. We sell out every market. We started off with 200 and we're running about 900 now.
You've made a conscious decision to advertise your eggs as pastured rather than free range now?
Yeah, that's right. I feel that free range doesn't have much of a meaning anymore. It's just birds per area. It doesn't have to be on grass or pasture.
How much do your eggs cost compared to, say, caged eggs?
Oh, probably triple.
And people are willing to pay that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no comparison, really. Look, the yolks are nice and orange and the white is so firm when you crack them. Yeah, it just doesn't compare.
But quantifying the rise in the popularity of pastured eggs is hard to do, according to Rowan McMonnies.
The thing with pastured egg production is it very regularly is under the radar. It's local, and it's not possible to observe value or the volume of eggs that are going through those markets, often selling at farm gate, sometimes to local cafes and restaurants. There are not many very large players that are supplying on a pastured basis so that you could isolate it through a supermarket segment.
Australian Eggs Managing Director Rowan McMonnies. And staying with eggs, farmers are warning they'll go out of business if major retailers don't start passing on higher prices to consumers. Higher grain prices are costing egg farmers a fortune, but they're saying retailers are refusing to lift prices. Warwick Long spoke with Werribee farmer Brian Ahmed from the Victorian Farmers Federation Egg Group about the extra cost of chicken feed.
While some farmers had grain tied up for a period of time, what we've noticed now is when they're going to rebuy their grain, they're being hit with up to a 40% increase in their cost of grain.
Well, we'll step through some of that. So over half of your costs are your feed.
That's correct. As egg production, over half of it is reliant on what you're buying your feed at.
And so, obviously, because it's such a big cost, you lock in prices a long way out, but those contracts are coming up for renewal and you're finding they're much more expensive now.
That's correct. Well, look, some farmers buy off the market and they buy on a monthly basis. So those farmers would have been seeing an increase over the past 6 months gradually. But those farmers who had it tied up for the last 12 months are all of a sudden being hit with one massive increase right now as their contracts are ending. They've got to renew their contracts now. Yes.
And so what does it mean to farmers when suddenly you're getting a 40% increase in the price that you've got to pay to feed your chickens?
Well, there's not a lot of money in a dozen eggs. So really, we can't absorb a 40% increase in our cost of production. And we understand the drought and what's happening with grain prices. And we fully accept that we have to pay more for our feed. But what... our retailers don't understand is they have to pay more for their eggs. So, and they're expecting us to give them the eggs at the same price or even at a cheaper price, and it just does not add up.
So retailers aren't coming to the party at all when you're facing higher prices?
That's correct. We go in and we expect an increase in our price, and they're not prepared to pay for it.
That must be really frustrating from a producer's standpoint.
It is. It's frustrating in any business, Warwick. You think about it. If you've got a 40% increase in costs, you expect to put the price of your product up. That's just economics. And if we're expected to wear it from both ends, then that's a disaster for family farms.
Do you think it'll push some family farms out of the business?
I think it will. If you have a look at some companies, even larger companies, that they can't wear that cost increase as well. It's, like I said earlier, there's not that much money in the price of eggs where you can absorb 40% increase in your cost of production.
And when we're talking retailers, are we talking all the major retailers not coming to the party, willing to pay more?
Well, they're the ones that control our industry. It's no different. I mean, you've heard a lot about the milk and you've heard a lot about a lot of other sectors. The egg industry is no different. The large retailers in this country hold a major part of the retail market, so we're all in the same boat.
So I'd imagine there's a lot of egg farmers desperately looking for cheaper grain at the moment.
Well, they are. They're looking, but there isn't any out there. That's the problem.
And given this year's harvest is so poor, do you think this problem's going to be around for some time?
I think it is. And if we don't get an increase in egg costs, then we will see farms closing down. There is no way they can sustain this for long periods of time.
So what can be done about this, Brian Ahmed? Do you have a solution?
I think the supermarkets and the consumers have to understand. On one hand, they're telling us they want more free-range eggs. Now, free-range production is even worse because that's a far more costly production system. And if people want these more expensive farming systems, they've got to be prepared to pay more for the eggs. And retailers have to understand that if they want cheaper products, we have what they call caged eggs, and we can do it very well, and we can produce a cheaper product. And that's the way we can do it. So we can't have both. We can't have free range and cheap. It doesn't work.
Brian Ahmed farms eggs at Werribee near Melbourne. My name's Clint Jasper, and that's it from me this week. You can listen back to these stories at the ABC Listen app or at the ABC Radio website. These stories and more about food and farming are at our website, abc.net.au/rural. Bye for now.